Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
That is the first film that I've seen from North Korea.
It's the only film you'll ever see from North Korea, probably.
This is probably true as well. Hopefully not. Maybe in 30 years, North Korea will be a free country with a glowing film industry.
Sorry.
It's not funny, Dylan. There's people starving in North Korea.
I know. I feel bad for them. I mean, it's a terrible place to live.
Yeah.
In fact, I think our making of part of this podcast today will just illustrate how twisted North Korea is.
Anyway, what's the film we're talking about?
We're talking about Pulgasari.
Pulgasari.
That's the subject of our Stomp This Way episode this week. A film that's probably has a far more interesting backstory than actual story. I didn't have any alternate titles this week.
No, there's also no box office information this week.
No box office information. I don't know how box office works in North Korea. Do they pay to go to it, or are you government mandated to go watch
this kind of movie?
These films. I'm not really sure how that works.
Do they get, like, our blockbusters, like the Avengers movies and stuff like that?
I'm going to say
maybe.
Probably not. If they are, probably they are not. Heavily censored.
Yeah.
I'm going to say probably not. Most of the movies they get are movies like these that are co-produced by the government with government-approved messages. We'll talk about the message in this movie, but usually, you know, pro-communist, look how great we are messages, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. So anyway, let's get into how this movie was brought about. So at the time this movie, this is in the
1980s.
1985. Kim Jong-il was the leader of North Korea.
I think his father was still technically the leader of North Korea.
Was he still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, Kim Jong-il was the... What was his father's name? Like Kim Jong-song?
Kim Jong-song or something like that, yeah.
Who was the first line of the Kim Jong family. Kim Jong-il was, obviously, the second. Kim Jong-il was a huge fan of movies. He had, like, I read a collection of, like, 15,000 films that he had amassed while you know, growing up as the son of, you know, the dictator of North Korea. He loved film. And he also liked Godzilla movies. So he decided that he wanted to make a Godzilla movie. So
Essentially.
So in 1976, South Korean actress, I'm sure I'm going to butcher these names, Cho Eun-hee was kidnapped by orders of Kim Jong-il by a North Korean operative in Hong Kong posing as a businessman who was going to try to set her up with a new production company. She was apparently a pretty popular South Korean actress. She was struggling at the time, though, because her and her husband, claimed South Korean director Shin Sang-ok, had gotten a divorce. But anyway, after she disappeared, apparently people started thinking maybe he had something to do with it. So he went to Hong Kong to look for her, and he got kidnapped too. He had two escape attempts. He made two escape attempts, and so they put him in a prison or an internment camp to convert him to communism, to the South North Korean ideology. So after he was believed to have been converted, he wasn't really converted, he was just faking it. Anyway, they let him out, and they went to like a dinner party immediately afterwards with Kim Jong-il, where Kim Jong-il reunited him with his ex-wife, and basically told them to get remarried, and made them work on movies together. They made seven movies, or he made seven movies while they were in Korea. Most of them starred his wife. This particular one did not. That was in 1983 when he started making movies for the North Korean regime. So they made this movie. This was the last one that he made for Kim Jong-il, for the North Koreans. Actually, might be the ones that he can thank for his escape, because while promoting this movie, he and his wife were allowed to go to a film festival in Vienna. And and they were while they were there, they were able to escape their handlers and go run to the U.S. Embassy and take refuge. And they were able to take refuge at the U.S. Embassy, and then after that, the United States government moved them to Virginia for 2 years in like some kind of protective custody thing, and then they were allowed to move back to South Korea. And so, yeah, that's his story.
Poor guy.
There's like a whole book published about it and everything. It's a pretty interesting story. I guess him and his wife lived happily ever after together. I guess there's nothing.
Maybe the traumatic experience of both being kidnapped.
Nothing like brings you back together, like being kidnapped and forced to work by the North Koreans, yeah. I guess. But anyway, other interesting tidbits. A Toho special effects crew was tricked into helping make this movie. They were told they were going to go film a movie in China when the plane landed.
They weren't in China.
They were in North Korea. But they went ahead and they agreed to... At first, they were just going to advise, but they said they got there. I've like listened to interviews and said they got there, and the people that were working on the movie had no clue what they were doing, so they were just like, here, we'll just do it. And so they did the special effects for this movie, including the actors who play Pulgasari were part of that special effects crew. We'll talk about them in a little bit when we get into cast and crew. The film is loosely based on the legend of Bulgasari with a B. Who is a iron-eating monster from Korean myth, and this movie was released in North Korea in 1985. Watching it, you would be like 60s, maybe 70s, but it just tells you the state of North Korea's film industry is probably a good 20 or 30 years behind any other country's film industry. So, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, it's really all I had for the making of.
Got an interesting backstory.
It does have an interesting
probably backstory. One of the more interesting backstories of any movie that we've watched.
That we've watched
or will watch.
So right now we're
doesn't mean it's the best movie we've watched though.
Yeah, we'll see how it translates to the screen. We're gonna listen to a quick trailer, and then we are going to come back and talk about the rest of this thing. See you in a minute. 完成から12年。
封印され続けてきた幻の傑作が今時放たれた。映画史に刻まれるこの歴史的事件を見逃してはならない。プルガサリ伝説の大怪獣。誰も見ることのできなかった怪獣映画の最高傑作が 35mmニュープリント完全版でついに日本上陸。全世界の映画ファンが夢にまで見た伝説的見せ場の数々、その全貌が明らかになる時が来た。1万人以上の群衆が繰り広げる驚異のスペクタクル、壮大なスケールで展開する破壊のカタルシス。今熱い注目の中、 映画史に残る怪獣映画の金字塔が世界で初めて大スクリーンに登場する。全世界が待っていた伝説の怪獣映画ついに解禁。 プルガサリ伝説の大怪獣。
Alright, we're back. We're gonna
butcher
some names real good. This movie is obviously directed by the man we've been talking about, Shin Sang-ok. Although he is not the credited director. If you look at the credits.
Yeah.
I guess.
Look at the credits at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, the guy who actually did the music, Jong Gon-so, he's the one who is the credited director. I'm assuming probably because he was North Korean, so he got the direction credit. I don't really know. But anyway, or maybe the bootleg we've got is just flawed. I don't know.
It's definitely a bootleg. I don't know that it was worth the $15 you paid for it.
It's the one that you can get on Amazon. If you Google it, I mean, if you search it on Amazon, it's the first one that pops up. My Xbox wasn't going to play it. I put it in my PlayStation and it played it. For a bootleg, though, it's not a bad copy. I mean, it's not a great quality, but it's not bad. It's watchable, definitely watchable. And the subtitles are good. They're not butchered or there's not a lot of typos or anything. So anyway, written by Sae Ryun Kim. And I put, because this is an actual credit, produced by Kim Jung Il. And starring Sun Hoo Chang, Hamji Sop, Jong-uk Ri, and then Kenpachiro Satsuma, who would go on to be the Heisei-era Godzilla suit actor. He plays the adult Pulgasari. And then March on the Dwarf, who we know as Minya. He plays a baby Pulgasari.
Much better character that he's playing in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Poor March on the Dwarf.
You want to read that plot summary I just wrote 30 seconds ago?
All right, so Aaron has prepared this plot summary less than 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
In early 14th century Korea, the people of a local village are struggling to feed themselves. The young men are plotting to overthrow their governor, but those plans hit a snag when the governor pays a visit to the village to force the local blacksmith to make weapons for his army. But when it is discovered that the blacksmith has helped the villagers hide their iron tools from the governor, the old man is tortured and starved. Right before his death, he creates a mold of the mythical monster Pulgasari out of rice. When his daughter bleeds on it, the Pulgasari model comes to life and begins eating everything made of iron, growing all the while. The local villagers enlist Pulgasari to help them in their battle against the government, and all goes good for a while. The king sends a general to handle the situation, but despite the general's creative efforts, he is unable to kill the monster. Eventually, the villagers, along with Pulgasari, march on the capital, and the king and all of his men are killed. But Pulgasari has grown to massive size and is constantly in search of iron to eat. After eating most of the villagers' weapons and tools, the daughter of the blacksmith sacrifices herself so that Pulgasari will die as well.
Yep, basic plot of the movie. Yeah, left out some of the human drama, but I guess we can talk about it. So, getting into this movie, you know, not considering it's an outside situation, not bad.
Not
halfway decent.
Pretty
good. It reminds me a lot. You know, this movie was supposedly inspired by Godzilla 1984 because Kim Jong-il saw it and really liked it. This movie is not similar to Return of Godzilla at all.
No.
It is actually reminds me much more of the Daimajin films in the way that it's kind of set in, like, I guess what the Korean equivalent of feudal era Korea, with these villagers and this, you know, evil governor and stuff. And even the way, like, Pulgasari moves sometimes, because he's kind of like he's made designed to make he's made out of iron. Like, he's got a, like, you know, like, especially iron. Like his chest looks like an armored chest and everything. An
iron chest.
And at the end, spoiler alert, when he, like, kind of like Daimajin, he, like, turns back into stone and then crumbles away and turns into, like, a blue ball, which I'm pretty sure Daimajin does that too at the end of the first film, at least. But
hey, spoilers, I haven't seen that one yet.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I mean, like, this early setup, because a lot of this movie is about these villagers and
their battle against the government.
Struggling to feed themselves, and their battle against this evil government. I mean, the human characters, you have Ami, who is the daughter of the blacksmith. Then you have her future husband, who is the nephew of the blacksmith, or maybe?
I guess, I don't know. Something.
And he's like the leader of these bandits that are waging this war against the government. And then you have the Ami's younger brother, and it's really the main cast. And, you know, I mean, they're fine, I think, you know, for what it is. I mean, they're a little overdramatic sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Overall, could be a lot worse.
Could be a lot worse. I think it's kind of funny, you know, this movie is supposed to be an allegory for the evils of giant capitalism. I guess Kim Jong-il watching this movie realized how ironic it was that it was his people that are starving in the streets. But, you know, whatever. I wonder if the director, you know, knowing what we know about him, if he kind of wrote this movie with, like, the underlying message of, you know, like, actually poking fun at or showing the pitfalls of communism.
Yeah.
Which is
highly possible.
Because, yeah, I mean, watching this movie, you know, like, with our Western viewpoint, we'd be like, well, that's obviously, like, bashing communism, bashing his own country, because it's North Korea's people that they put in internment camps and starved to death. Not what happens in America. But, you know, you don't really know what.
And, like, taking things from their citizens to help
better
their country.
For the better of the, I mean, yeah, that's communism.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
everyone gets their equal share.
Everyone gets an equal share. For the better of the government. Because, you know, it's all about it's like the People's Republic
of
North Korea or something.
It's all about the hive mind.
Yeah, it is. For the best of what's the best for the people as a whole. But anyway, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I kind of like this movie. You know, it takes a little bit to get there, but about the 21 minute mark, when Pulgasari, the old man, makes a model of Pulgasari out of rice and then, like, prays to it and comes alive, or comes alive after his daughter like cuts herself.
Bleeds on it.
She's like, oh my gosh. It's kind of cute. Like when he's small, like they got March on the Dwarf in the costume, and he's like eating her sewing needles. Mm-hmm. They actually built like these like life size sewing needles, and like later this life size like door lock. It's kind of cool. And, you know, he's eating them, and then he escapes, and then they go look for him, and then he's turned into, like, a slightly bigger version, like a child-sized version of Fulgasari, and he's, like, eating all their metal, and then he turns into an adult size, and when the bandits see him as an adult, they're like, he can lead our army. And then I love that, like, they cut, and he's, like, leading their army as they're, like, marching against
charging into battle,
and it's pretty funny. And then, you know, they do, like, a montage, and he gets bigger and bigger, and they're, like, winning. And then the king, we see the king, not the governor, but the actual king of the country or whatever. And he orders this general to go take care of it. And they like...
come up with this scheme to...
Capture
him.
And
force
Pulgasari into this giant cage, basically. Yeah. They burn him.
It's made of wood.
And actually, I think one of the more interesting scenes, at least, of the movie, they burn him. And then he comes back out of the ground after they burn him. And it's like, they put this red filter over the lens.
Yeah.
And now it looks pretty cool, I think, when it's looking at Pulgasari. He's bathed in this red light. And he's, you know, stomping on these people.
When it's not focused on Pulgasari, it makes things hard to see.
Yeah, it's weird. When it's like looking at the humans with this red filter on, it's weird. It doesn't quite the same effect. But anyway, so they do that. And then later they hire a priestess to excise the spirit of the old blacksmith out of him. I'm not really sure if that... maybe that plays into the end. Maybe that's why he's difficult to deal with at the end of the movie. But they also bury him in this giant, like, Team Rocket style. They dig out a huge hole. They make him fall into it, and they cover him in rocks. But then the Ami goes, and she cuts herself and bleeds on him again, and he comes back out and, you know, helps the bandits again. At some point, Ami's, the boyfriend, the leader of the bandits or whatever, Ide, he's a...
Inde.
Like that. He's a hung.
Yes.
But, anyway, so then Pulgasari comes back and continues to stomp around. And they go and march on the capital and destroy the
capital. Destroy it.
But then at the end of the movie, their savior turns against them. And he has become so large, and he needs so much iron intake that they can't feed him. So the daughter puts herself in this iron vase and lets Pulgasari eat her. And when she dies, he dies. At first, he like crumbles and becomes smaller, back to like
baby Pulgasari,
and then he turns into a blue light and like re-merges with her.
Yeah.
As you see her tear streaming down her dead face, and then it cuts to black. Actually, this
actually doesn't cut to black. It
cuts to trailers.
Trailers.
Like, shouldn't they put the trailers at the beginning of the movie?
This is North Korea. They might do it differently.
Well, it wasn't a North Korean DVD. It's just a bootleg, American bootleg DVD.
And they're not Korean trailers, no.
No, they're not. They're like old sci-fi movies.
They just...
they're like, and we'll put these on there. That'll work. These are royalty-free trailers.
Royalty-free trailers.
Here's some movies you might want
to
watch.
Probably other movies that they've bootlegged that they want you to watch, you know? But anyway, what do y'all think about the plot of this movie?
I mean, overall, it's pretty decent, I guess. I mean, I've definitely seen worse movies for sure so far.
With worse plots.
Definitely. It's interesting, the story. I mean, I think it is kind of ironic how it plays into the whole thing about North Korea.
But, yeah.
It's very ironic, honestly. But overall, it's decent. I mean, it's got a decent story behind these, you know, villagers, you know, trying to stand up to the government or whatever. And the monster's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So,
I mean. Looks all right.
Yeah, I actually think Pulgasari is, you know, is a decent concept. I mean, you know, they're saying from myth or whatever. And I think they use him pretty well. I think, actually, I kind of enjoy, like, the scenes where he's, like marching with the armies.
It cracks me up, dude.
It's kind of funny. I mean, and it's...
he's like...
yeah, he's marching, yeah. And, like, and like I said, the drama
it cracks aspect, me up when he eats stuff, too.
Yeah, when he's eating the iron. It's harsh. The drama aspect, I mean, obviously it's not award-winning or anything, but I mean, it could be much worse.
I've seen movies
where it's much worse. I think in this movie it's fine. Some of the stuff the government does is kind of brutal. Like, there's a scene where they take this old woman and they're, like, breaking boards over her knees.
Yeah.
And torturing her while they're trying to make her little boy tell them where the older brother is that leads the bandits or whatever.
And the girl cutting herself at the end of the movie to bleed. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's kind of gross. And Pulgasari gets shot in the eye. With, like, they, like, invent rockets in this movie. They put, like... black powder like on spears and shoot him at Folgasari. And then at the end of the movie, they invent cannons to fight Folgasari.
Didn't go well.
Obviously doesn't work. But yeah, Folgasari, he gets shot in the eye. That's one of the, I guess, a plot hole. He gets shot in the eye, but then like two scenes later, he's just fine. But there's a lot of blood in that one scene going down.
Oh, yeah.
There is.
Maybe he washed his blood off.
Whatever. But yeah, so I don't know. I enjoyed the plot. I mean, it's nothing great here, but considering the circumstances in which this movie was made,
and I'm sure the very low budget,
low budget, I think it's halfway entertaining.
It's decent,
pretty good.
It's definitely much better than the Godzilla movie we watched last week.
It's better than Godzilla's Revenge. I'll give it that. That is for sure.
Or I gave that movie. I almost gave that movie an F.
I gave that movie a D minus.
Yeah, I also gave it a D minus.
I gave it a D. I was nice.
Wow.
But go back and listen to our last episode if you want to hear our thoughts on All Monsters Attack. But anyway, I guess that covers our thoughts on the story.
Let's get into creature design.
Creature design.
Pogasari's cool looking.
He's a decently
designed monster.
I like him.
I haven't watched any Ultraman, but I imagine he's very similar to what a lot of Ultraman monsters look like, but maybe a little cooler.
A little cooler.
Yeah, a little better made than most Ultraman monsters, yes.
All Ultraman monsters are
Ultraman 80 had some pretty neat designs.
I feel like Ultraman's monster suits are just hand-me-downs from Toho.
Pretty much, yeah.
Andrew, like, here, you want to borrow this one? No.
Andrew mentioned Ultraman 80. We're currently watching Ultraman 80. That's what we're on right now, and its production values have gone up a little bit from some of the previous shows. But yeah, I like Folgasari quite a bit. You know, he's got those horns, and like I said, he's got like
the armored plating on his chest and stuff, and on his legs,
like he's made of iron and stuff. Yeah. And his eyes, I really like his eyes. They didn't just do the cheap glowing eyes; they did like realistic looking eyes.
Yeah, and they move.
And they move, and I don't know. I think he looks pretty.
I think Folgasari's pretty cool looking.
He looks pretty.
I like the way he moves, like he's walking like some giant macho man or something.
Yeah.
Baby Folgasari looks a lot better than Mina.
Folgasari does look a lot better than Mina.
Good job, Marchand Dwarf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it looks like he's struggling to walk.
Like he's struggling to walk.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe the suit was a little big for him or something.
A little big, or maybe he's a little stiff or something. I don't know.
He's like, guys, I can't walk in this.
But yeah, I think Folgasari is pretty cool. A lot better than Gabra, which was our featured monster last time.
Gabra.
At least Folgasari has a tail.
Exactly.
Moving on to effects. Hit and miss, I'll say. There's some really ugly matting effects.
Yeah, if you can consider it matting.
But there's some pretty cool,
It's not even like matting, honestly. I would say it's just, it looks almost like they filmed scenes and then put it on a projector screen behind people. Yeah, a real projection. Instead of like, using a green screen or a blue screen effect and superimposing people onto the shot. It looks like they set up a big projector screen behind a bunch of people and then just played the image.
Yeah,
like, it looks like a projection. Shadow.
Yeah, that's probably what they did for a lot of it.
Because they couldn't afford the green screen effects, probably.
They couldn't afford the compositing. But it does look rough in spots. But I mean, I don't know. Like the little spears on rockets, those look pretty cool, I think.
The model work is pretty decent.
The model work is pretty good. Yeah. I really like a lot of the model. I mean, they didn't do super extravagant like cities and stuff. But like these ancient, old Korean style buildings that they built life size and destroyed and all that. I mean, like I said,
the castle and stuff.
The castles and stuff. I mean, look pretty decent set design, for a movie that's on a really low budget. Looks pretty good.
It's pretty decent.
Sound design
is weird.
Yeah, when they're sword fighting, it's like, I don't know. It's ding, ding.
Like the swords clash together, they go,
it sounds like almost like a Star Wars movie.
And you're like,
it sounds like Saturn missiles.
It reminded me of Halloween Resurrection when every time Michael moves the knife, it goes literally, whoosing. I'm like, a knife doesn't make that noise.
I don't know, maybe we'll have to try that.
It's like that metallic clang sound. But the sound design is not great for this movie.
No. It could be worse, though.
Could be worse. Really, it's the only
effects,
when they're sword
could be worse.
Yeah, and the effects could be much worse. There's some scenes where, they're shooting cannons. When they're shooting the cannonballs, most of the time, it's just, they're shooting actual cannons, and then they'll show, an explosion. But there's scenes where they want the cannonball to go in his mouth, so they draw, these little green animated cannonballs going into his mouth, and they'll, draw little red animated cannonballs coming out, back out, when he spits it back out at him, and that could look kind of rough. But, yeah, overall, I mean, it wasn't
could have been a lot terrible. Worse.
Could have been a lot worse. Score. Music. It's odd.
It's odd. It's like they picked up some random keyboard player off the street and was like, you. make us music. He's like, I guess
the mood of the music really doesn't match the mood of the scene.
No,
it's like more cheery music with some really dark scenes.
It's all like synthesized. Yeah. It's very odd.
It is weird.
Yeah. I want a instrumental kind of bombastic type score, like a war
movie. Like, because a lot of this looks like just like an old war movie, like you said it reminds you of an old samurai movie.
Something like that would have been good.
But they're working with what they got.
Maybe something like I don't know who does the scores for Akira Kurosawa's movies, but
it's we've talked about him on this podcast several times.
Is it Sato?
Yeah, Masaru Sato, yeah.
Maybe a Sato score would have
been. He does most of Kurosawa's movies.
Would have been nice or something like that.
I think he would have been a good, but you know, he's Japanese, not Korean.
That's true, he's Japanese, not Korean.
They can't con him into coming overseas, so.
He's like, no, thank you.
No, I know your plots.
So, you know, whatever. But anyway, yeah, let's get into some final thoughts. Andrew, would you like to start us off?
Well, I think this movie is pretty good overall. Effects, hit and miss. Polkastar looks pretty good. I like the design of that monster.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to give this movie a C-.
C-, all right.
C-. Overall, this movie could have definitely been much worse, especially given the circumstances and I'm sure the extremely limited budget. But overall, it's pretty decent. The story is kind of interesting. Like I said, you know, this like struggle of these villager people struggling against a evil government and trying to overthrow it. We haven't seen that movie before.
No, never.
But it's decent. And Polgasari looks really good. I think he's a pretty cool looking monster. Well designed. I like his, you know, armor plating look of him. And I think the way he moves, it is kind of clunky at times, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
He does make him look like he's trying to like walk around like he's big and bad or something like that. It's kind of funny. The effects, like we said, they're hit and miss. I'd say more hit than miss most of the time. I mean, some of just the, you know, if we want to call it matting is questionable. And a few of like the little models and stuff like that are maybe not the best, but the model work overall as a whole is pretty good for what's in this movie. And the score's a little odd for the movie. It doesn't, you know, the tone like you said doesn't fit the tone of the movie at the time. Definitely could have used something more like I said, more a la Sato or something like that. But overall, could have been a lot worse. Could have been a lot better. I'll give it a C.
All right. Yeah, I'll just basically echo what y'all said. This movie's backstory is much more interesting than the movie itself. But the movie itself is not bad. I actually kind of enjoyed a lot of it. Like I said, I think some of the most fun scenes are when Polgasari is like marching with the bandit army against the evil government. I mean, that's kind of funny in a weird sort of way. And like I said, the drama aspect of it's not terrible. Could be much worse. It reminds me a lot of a Daimajin film, which I love Daimajin movies. It's obviously not as good as they are, but so that's a good thing to remind me of. And I like Polgasari. The acting in this movie is halfway decent. Effects compared to like 70s era Toho films are pretty good. Now, if you really think about the fact that this movie's made in 85, but you got to remember that North Korea's film industry is probably lagging a good 20, 30 years behind everybody else's. So, you know, it's fine. So, yeah, I also like old samurai, old war movies, stuff like that. And that's also a large part of this movie. So I actually enjoyed this movie a decent amount. I'm going to give it a C as well. Definitely could have been a much worse time. But forget the movie. I've got something much more important to talk about. Guess what, guys? Guess what I got?
Nobody cares.
On October 29th, I got the Godzilla Criterion Collection.
How excited are you?
Let's do a mini review here.
It's incredible.
Cover art. Back cover and front cover. Really cool.
Mm-hmm. I will say the artwork overall for the entire book is very impressive.
Yeah, so if you open it, it reads like a book. You open it, and the first thing you see is like this. I haven't read all of it, but
Why don't you
pull it down, Andrew, and I'll hold it in my hand. There's like a 4-page backstory of Godzilla. I believe it is written by Steve Rifle.
Aaron has it sitting in a place of honor on his top shelf.
I have it on my top toy collecting shelf. Here, let me open it up. I'm holding it in my hands, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, first we have this nice cover art of Godzilla fighting.
It's the same cover, the same planes. Artwork from the back where the discs are.
Yeah, and then you go and so they have
got a nice table of contents over there.
Table of contents, and then they have this Reign of Destruction, which is like just a background of Godzilla. It's like a
1, 2, 3.
It's a 3-page article written by Steve Rifle, and then each individual film has a
decent write-up about it.
A decent write-up about it. They have the cast and the credits. And then they have that's on the left side, and on the right page, there is a piece of artwork for each film. And the write-ups are done by Ed Gojicheski.
Does he work for the Criterion Channel or Collection?
I don't know if he works for them. He's a big in the Godzilla fandom, so they probably just contracted him to write them. So very, very, I love the artwork. Some of this artwork is really, really great.
It's really neat. It's kind of like a pop art slash hand-drawn kind of look. Yeah. It's really pretty. I don't know, this next one for Ghidra the Three-Headed Monster is probably one of my favorites.
I was going to say, if you had to pick one, which would be your favorite art?
It's like the way it's drawn is almost like a Japanese tattoo, like a koi fish tattoo.
Yeah.
But with Godzilla holding the three heads of Ghidra.
Yeah, it's really neat. Would that be your favorite?
That's probably my favorite. That one cracks me up. Invasion of Astro Monster. It has Rodan and everyone, and it has Godzilla right in the center doing that stupid dance thing he does.
I'll look at the little one for Son of Godzilla. It's like a little
mini. Little mini standing on his tail. That one's really cool, too.
The Toriyama Monster one is really cool.
It's got little things of all the monsters.
That's a funny painting of that kid. That's for all the monsters attack.
Maybe Aaron will take pictures and post them on the news section or something.
What?
Maybe you can take pictures and post it in the news section or something.
Yeah, maybe I will. The Hedorah one, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
The Gigan one, that's pretty cool.
I watched a guy unbox this the other day. He's never watched all the Godzilla movies or whatever. Yeah. Apparently, he says he's a fan of Godzilla, but he said Gigan.
Get him off. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, actually, probably my personal favorite is the Godzilla versus Megalon one. It's like Godzilla's looming over in the background.
He's like a mushroom cloud.
He looks like a mushroom cloud with the sun at his back. And then in the foreground, you have Jet Jaguar, anime style, fighting Megalon and Gigan. And Gigan's got one of his bladed arms looks like a giant sword or something. Yeah, it looks like something you've seen in anime. It's pretty neat. That's probably my favorite. Andrew, do you have a favorite?
That Mega Godzilla one I like.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Mega. It's like a painting, you're looking under Godzilla up at Mega Godzilla, and King Caesar on the other side of Mega Godzilla.
I like that one.
But yeah, and then, so let's get to the disc real quick. So there are 8 discs. The original Godzilla has its own disc, and then there are, I think, 2 films to each.
There's 3 on some of them.
There's 3 on disc 3.
And 4.
Yeah, and there's 3 on disc 4. But anyway, an important note, if you have got this or you're planning on getting this, if you look on disc 2 and you see King Kong versus Godzilla and you're like, this is just the American version. Due to some weird legal entanglements, they put the Japanese version of the film on disc 8.
Which is the supplements disc.
Which is the supplements disc to get around some legal stuff. I have watched most of the special features. They include, there's this 1990 documentary where Yoshimitsu Banno, who directed Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, he interviews, has an hour-long interview with Ishiro Honda. It's pretty neat. You get to learn a lot about Ishiro Honda and his life and stuff. There's an interview from 1999, a 15-minute interview with Akira Fukube. Then they got a short interview with this guy named Alex Cox, who's apparently a filmmaker of some sort, and he's talking about Godzilla for 5 minutes. They have an interview with the suit actor for Jet Jaguar. It's about 7 minutes long. They have an interview with Ben Furuya, who was the suit actor in the original Ultraman. They have an interview with him that's about 7 minutes long or so. And then they have this from 1984 when Toho had put together this reel of unused effect sequences. I didn't watch all of it. I watched about 20 minutes of it. I mean, it's pretty neat though, what they show, and they interview some different people and talk about working with Eiji Tsuburaya and everything. So it's pretty neat. And then they have the old trailers for all the original 15 movies. So some pretty nice special features. That's probably about two and a half to three hours. Not including the movie, the whole movie they put on there. Probably about 2.5 to 3 hours of special feature content, which is not bad. And then we had the back cover, which is Godzilla in the ocean looking up at the sky or something. So
Walking away. It's got a nice texture on the front of it too, and on the back. It's kind of
neat. So
the 1,000th release from the Criterion Collection.
I don't have many. I mean, I think it's worth every penny I paid for. I love it. I mean, if you're going to nitpick it, you could say, well, you know, they don't have the subbed and dubbed version for every movie. In fact, they don't have them for most of the movies. I think the only, I'm not sure, but the only two that I know they have both versions are the original and King Kong vs. Godzilla. I think the rest are just the subbed versions, the original Japanese edits, which is fine with me. Obviously, I have the other guys on DVD or Blu-ray somewhere else. Or maybe you could argue you wish that each film had its own individual disc.
But really, discs is a lot, though.
Yeah, really, that's nitpicking. And I think Godzilla fans should, honestly, we should be happy that the Criterion Collection thought enough of Godzilla that they made it their big, extravagant 1,000th collection deal. I think it's really neat that they did that because, you know, Criterion Collection, they're not like Shout Factory or Mill Creek that deal with what I'm going to call nerdy stuff. Mm-hmm. Criterion Collection is really, and Janus Films, which is where, you know, who produces most of their films, they're really focused on old, I would say more old artsy films for the most part.
Yeah, it's definitely like, for more like
Akira Kurosawa, your film like buff. David Lynch, you know, they had those on there for a while. You know, more artsy stuff like that.
A lot of Alfred Hitchcock. Tarnico.
I'm sorry, what?
A lot of Alfred Hitchcock was on there.
Alfred Hitchcock is on there. You know, so, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's definitely aimed at your more film enthusiast or film buff or whatever.
So that they thought enough of Godzilla. Obviously,
Someone who's definitely a fan, the Criterion Collection, I say, is definitely a fan for people who are a fan of physical media and really love special features.
Yeah,
because that's features. Like one of the staples of
Criterion Collection. All the
special features and supplements and stuff. Little booklets and stuff that they give.
Like I got their Seven Samurai. Look, there's a little booklet and everything they got for it, and it's really really neat. So anyway, yeah, I love it. I mean, if you got the money for it, you got the money to throw around, I think the $165 you'll pay on Amazon is definitely worth it. I mean, you could wait. It'll probably go down in price a little bit. I don't know how many of these they're going to produce.
Probably not very many.
So, definitely pretty cool. I'll give the release an A. No, but it's really cool. Moving on. I made some minor schedule changes. I got on the schedule the other day and realized that I had left Godzilla's Revenge off the schedule. Like, I just skipped it. So, I was like, darn it. So, I put it back in. And then, the way it worked out, I needed another movie for next week. I mean, for after Godzilla vs. Ghidorah. So, 2 weeks from now. So, I moved. I had Eight-Legged Freaks, which is a fairly recent American giant spider movie. I moved it from the back of the schedule to the to after Godzilla vs. Ghidorah 2 weeks from now. So it was on Netflix for free, and of course they pulled it off as soon as I was getting ready to watch it. So I'll probably just have to rent it off Amazon Prime or something, or YouTube or something.
Somewhere.
It's not a great movie, but it's kind of a fun throwback to B movies of the 50s of the past. So that'll be our movie 2 weeks from now. But next week, really excited, we're gonna get to see our first film off one of these Criterion disc, Godzilla vs. Ghidorah.
Or Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster, depending on where you're from.
Yeah, well, we're watching the Japanese version, so Godzilla vs. Ghidorah. It's going to be a lot of fun. One of my personal favorites.
That one's interesting.
And one more piece of news item. I just saw this scrolling through Google today. Vulture, who is a subdivision of New York Magazine, they, in honor, I guess, of this Criterion release, one of their writers did a list of their top 50. They ranked the first 15 Godzilla films, the Showa era films. Overall, the list is BS.
What they put as number one, the first one?
They put the first one as number one, which I'll agree. They ranked Godzilla vs. Gigan last, and they put like All Monsters Attack as like number 11. Yeah, they. I don't know. I didn't agree with their order. I mean, you know, whatever. Each their own, I guess. I'm going to assume this writer. This is me assuming. Maybe I'm wrong.
You know what happens when you assume.
He's probably not a diehard Godzilla fan. He probably was told to watch these and rank them for this release.
We need you to watch these 15 movies. He's like, no. Please no.
But he does have like a paragraph explaining his decision for each one. So I mean, you can read it if you want. But anyway. I think I've dragged this episode out for a while. Anything else y'all wanted to add?
I'm excited to see our first Criterion Collection.
I'm excited to see how what the transfer looks like. Supposedly,
a lot of these is the first time they're on Blu-ray.
Well, all these are, except for the original, which Criterion already had on in its collection. Toho had already transferred these all to Blu-ray previously. They took Toho's, from what I've heard, they took Toho's transfers and then kind of touched them up and then put them on these discs. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what it looks like. I do have Godzilla vs. Ghidorah on Blu-ray, so it won't be the first time I'm watching it on Blu-ray or anything. But I am interested to see. And so maybe I heard this wrong, but I think they redid all the subtitles for these. Maybe I heard that wrong. I'm not sure, but we're going to find out. So, yeah, definitely exciting. But with all that being said, that's all we have for you this week. Don't forget that you can contact us if you need to at stompthisway1954@gmail.com.
Yeah, we are also up on social media. We're up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're at stompthisway on all those platforms. So make sure you give us a like or a follow.
Yeah, we also have a website. Andrew, why don't you tell them where that's at?
You can find it at www.stompthisway.podbean.com.
Yeah. There we have our schedule, we have our past episodes, we have our personal bios.
We also have whatever the latest news is that Aaron can find.
Yeah.
Maybe I convince him to take some pictures of this and put it on there so you can see what it looks like, see if you're interested in buying it. Maybe put a link to it or something. But yeah.
Yeah.
You can also see
our grades for previous
episodes and our full schedule of events.
I forgot to mention this earlier, but by the time you listen to this episode, we will have probably passed the 300 all-time listens mark. Took us a while to get there. No, it doesn't sound that big, but it's not a bad accomplishment.
Not bad.
We average a pretty steady, I don't know, maybe some of these are bots, I don't know. We average a pretty steady listen, like a new episode, once it's out for about a week or so, usually has 6 or 7 listens each episode. I think our most listened to episode is still Godzilla Aftershock at like 25 or something.
Interesting.
And it might have got promoted. I don't know. But anyway, so thank you. If you're out there listening to this, thank you for listening to us. Obviously, we're still a very young podcast. We're working on it. But anyway, yeah, that's all we have for you this week. Don't forget to join us next week for Godzilla vs. Ghidorah. As always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Angie.
And I'm Dylan. And we'll catch you next week.